In the garage of Dr. Frank Conrad, on November 2nd, 1920, the first scheduled pre-advertised radio program in the United States went on the air. Station KDKA was broadcasting returns of the presidential race on the evening of Election Day. From a humble beginning in a Pittsburgh garage to the sumptuous studios of the national radio networks in New York, Chicago, and Hollywood, these are the years we refer to as the Golden Age of Radio.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word in single time.
The Golden Age of Radio is brought to you by Farmers and Mechanics. The century-old savings bank is modern as this computer age, with branches in Middletown, Cromwell, Colchester, and Montville. You'll meet tonight's guest in just a moment. Right now, the time is 11:30 at night, and the 24-hour tellers of Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank can serve you even at this time of night. Get a for money card by opening a checking account or statement savings account, and you can withdraw up to $100 at any hour of the day or night at Cromwell Square, Main Street, and College Street, Middletown, and at the Colchester and Montville offices. It could happen on Friday night. You could suddenly decide to take off Saturday and Sunday to the mountains, the shore, the Cape, New York, or Boston. Aha! You find you're short of bread. So, with such sophistication provided by Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank, you can get $100 in a few minutes at the 24-hour teller. More and more depositors are carrying the great For Money card. A statement savings account tells you every month the total of savings, including the latest interest credited. It's the age of the computer, and Farmers and Mechanics is right up there with the latest modern features. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender.
And now, the Golden Age of Radio with host Dick Bertel.
Good evening, and with me once again is the man with 2,500 hours of old-time radio memories on tape, Ed Corcoran.
Thank you, Dick. Tonight we have, a name that everybody knows in radio, but I think the voice is even more familiar, and I thought we'd start off by playing an excerpt from one of his most famous shows.
Father, can I speak to you a minute?
What is it, Homer?
I'd like to ask you an embarrassing question.
Well?
Can I have $11.60?
I'll give you an answer which causes me no embarrassment. No.
Well, I certainly remember the part, and I do remember the actor. That, of course, is our guest, Jackie Kelk. Jackie, I'm going to call you Jack through the rest of the show.
I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I grew a beard for the occasion.
I know our audience, and of course your professional name was Jackie Kelk.
Yes, sure.
And so you'll forgive us if once in a while during tonight's show we slip into that.
I certainly will.
Well, Jackie, you... here I go.
Yeah, it didn't take long, Dick.
Jack, you... You were a child actor when you first began in this business, unlike many actors, radio actors, who played young people's parts but who changed their voices.
Yes, well, Dick, actually I started on the stage, the legitimate stage on Broadway, when I was 8 years old, and then went into, did some films, and then started in radio, you see, and I was still, you know, 9, 10 years old, so... I was just a kid, a brat.
And what show did
well,
you
actually,
start out on?
Well, the first show that I did on radio was with Fanny Bryce, Miss Fanny Bryce, who was a marvelous lady, by the way, a wonderful lady. And she had a famous sketch called The Coens, and I was her son, Oiving. Mm-hmm. And it was a half-hour show, a nighttime show, and that was the beginning of it. And then from there I went to Eddie Cantor, and I was always a brat, kind of a brat kid stooge, they used to call us in those days.
Could you fill us in on the picture that must have taken place on the stage of that radio studio? You were just a little boy.
Yes, I was, and it was always kind of, it's wonderful to think back on, Dick, because all of the people like Eddie Cantor, eventually Ethel Merman, whom I'm... still know and I'm very fond of, were very kind to a little boy, you know. I mean, they had to put me on a platform, a little box. There was a little kind of felt-covered box, and all these stars, when it was time my cue to come in, they would put the box up to the microphone, and mm-hmm. I'd come up with the script in my little tiny hands and, you know, be a smashing brat. But at one point, on I remember someone remarking in later years on the Ethel Merman had her own show on CBS, and I used to wear white suits, little white, you know, short, very dandy like, and Miss Merman used to wipe off the seat when I was sitting down, you know, waiting. We'd be introduced at the beginning of the broadcast. It was studio audience, naturally,
yes.
You know. And she would just sort of dust off the seat for me. And I had just, they were all just marvelous people.
Yeah, wonderful memories.
Well, at that age, 8 years old, did you memorize or did you actually read the script?
No, I read. I read, Ed. I started in at the professional children's school along with a great many other people who were, you know, grown up in the business.
I suppose we could follow your career chronologically, but...
I can't. I don't know how
I can. I think probably the best place to start would be with the Aldrich family. You, of course, were Homer Brown, and how did you get started on the show? The show began without you, I guess, as a 10-minute series on the Kate Smith Hour.
Yes, it did. No, first of all, it was Rudy Valley, then...
Rudy Valley?
Rudy Valley, then Kate Smith. And then it was a summer replacement for Jack Benny. And then General Foods took it over. And by the way, General Foods was the sponsor for all its years, you know. And it went on its own half hour. Eddie Bracken, when it first started in these skits on the Valley and Kate Smith show, played a character called Dizzy. And Eddie finally was discovered by Hollywood, and they needed a replacement. And so every young actor, young kid actor, but this is teens. By this time, I'm in my teens, you know. And so everybody in New York, all the kids were auditioning at the agency, the ad agency on Madison Avenue, and I just went in. Of course, I was called because I was very active in radio at that time. And I saw all these kids, and I thought, well, gee, you know, I don't have a chance. And I thought, well, I'll just hoot it up a little bit. And so that actually is the truth of how The Voice came about, because I just thought, well, why not, you know. And I looked into the control room where I'm looking now, and which I haven't looked at in a long time. And you know, they were kind of, you know, I could see the mouth going, and I got the part.
Do you think you could do the voice for us, Jack?
I haven't done. My voice finally changed when I was 39.
Like Jack Benny.
Yes, but I'm still 39.
It was an affected style then.
Yes,
the crack in the voice obviously was something.
Yes,
that
because
you
there
created.
Was a lot of nasal. To it, you know, and I guess there still is. It hasn't changed that much.
Well, we'll hear the voice from one of the early recordings right after this message.
Just as the melody lingers on long after the song has been played, so it is with the kind of personal banking you get at Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank. You appreciate all the things being done for you. It may not be noticeably apparent at first, but it grows on you. Modern personal banking services and more. The extra friendliness of the staff, not just the tellers, but the whole Farmers and Mechanics staff, branch managers, loan officers, even the president who is right there on the first floor with his door always open. Good old-fashioned service is a little rare in today's modern computer age, but you'll really find it at Farmers and Mechanics. And if you need computer age service at 2 o'clock in the morning, on a Sunday afternoon, or even on a holiday, you get it at Farmers and Mechanics 24-hour teller at four offices, Cromwell Square, Main and College Streets, and in Colchester and Montville. Join the happy customers of Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank, where the feeling of real friendliness lingers on.
American boys always grow up. They can't stop themselves. But no matter how important or how old they become, they always like to grow down to boyhood again and recapture their youth in the adventures of Henry Aldrich.
Oh, Look, Henry, look. The lake's just like glass.
Oh, boy. Well...
Hey, Henry, wait a second. Where are you going?
I told you 10 times, Homer. I've got to deliver this fruitcake.
But gee whiz, I thought you were going out on the lake with me.
Oh, no, Homer. I walked a block out of my way so we could see how the ice looked. And now I've got to go over to Mrs. Proctor's.
Henry, we're right here, aren't we? Why don't we put on our skates and go down the lake once before the crowd gets here?
Now, Homer, don't tempt me. When I tell my mother although I'll admit I might step out here just one step to see how smooth it is.
Sure, Henry. And why don't you put your skates on?
And no, Homer, I'm just going to walk out a ways. In the first place, Mrs. Proctor's waiting for this fruitcake. Gee, it isn't bad out here, is it?
No, Henry, and boy, watch me slide.
Look out, Homer, stand back.
What are you going
to
do?
I'm going to take just one long running slide and then beat it over to Mrs. Proctor.
Wait a second, I'll slide with you.
Homer, I can't wait. Here I go. Whee! Hey. Hey, Homer!
Oh, boy, Henry, look out. Hey, Henry.
Don't forget to stop off and leave those things at the tailor's, will you?
I won't. I've already got them out in the car. Isn't somebody at our back door there?
Hello, Mrs. Aldrich.
Why, hello there, Homer. I thought you were with Henry.
Who, me? Well, I'll tell you, I was with him, and then he asked me... I decided to come over here for something.
Dear, Henry hasn't gone skating, has he?
Skating? No. No, Henry didn't even put his skates on. Could I just step up to Henry's room for a second and sort of look around for something that I'd like to see whether I can find?
You want to go up to his room?
It's okay. Boy, I want to call somebody out the back door here. Oh, Charlie.
What did she say, Homer? Did you talk her into it?
Charlie. Say hello to Mrs. Aldrich. She's right here behind the door.
Oh, hello, Mrs. Aldrich.
Good morning, Charlie. What is it you want?
Well, I just... Well, you see, here's what happened.
Come on, Charlie. Mrs. Aldrich is very busy baking, and we don't want to bother her.
Okay.
Now, don't make a mess up there, boys.
Oh, no.
Alice, exactly what is it I'm supposed to tell the tailor?
Sam, everything of mine is to be dry cleaned.
Yes?
And Henry's suit and his 2 pairs of trousers are to be sponged and pressed.
Fine.
And tell him Henry would like at least his suit back by Monday, because he hasn't a thing up in his closet.
Very well.
Are you leaving now?
No, not just yet.
Mrs. Aldrich.
Yes, Homer?
Mrs. Aldrich, Does Henry still have the same room he's always had?
Why, yes, Homer, of course.
Is that right?
Why do you ask?
Oh, no reason. The closet, the whole thing seemed a little empty.
Well, what is it you're looking for, dear?
Nothing, Mrs. Aldrich. Oh, Charlie.
Homer, was Henry going to meet you here?
Why, no, not exactly. We were going to come here and then he'll probably be at the lake when I get back.
Hey, Homer, what's keeping you?
Listen, Charlie, did you find anything?
I found a sweater.
What good will a sweater do? What Henry needs is a pair of trousers.
Well, where are his trousers?
That's what I don't understand. And listen, Charlie, you gotta let me take your pants over to him.
Oh, no, Homer.
But, Charlie, don't you realize Henry's over at the lake, and all he's got to keep him warm is a fire? Come on now, let me have them.
Oh, no, Homer, oh, no, I'll take your pants.
But, Charlie, don't you realize your pants are brown? They're the same color as Henry's. All he's got to do is put them on and nobody'll ever know he fell in.
Well, why don't you go over to your house and get him your brown pants?
Because my mother's looking for me, and if I go anywheres near my house, I'm sunk.
Well, you can't have mine.
But, Charlie, you look tired. You can get into Henry's bed and read a good book.
Oh, no.
Now listen, Charlie.
Our guest is Jackie Kelk, who created the part of Homer Brown on radio on the Aldrich Family for how many years, Jack?
13 years.
13 years. Did the association with the part of Homer ever hold you back in any way career-wise? By that I mean you were so closely associated with the show that perhaps producers felt that they didn't want to hire you for something else. Did this...
No,
ever occur to you?
Dick, as a matter of fact, it opened a couple of other very interesting doors. I remember distinctly an agent who is now a very top-flight agent in California. At that time, he was simply starting and was really kind of getting ideas and hustling. And there used to be a drugstore in the RCA building where we all hung out, you mm-hmm. know, like Schwab's in California, you know, uh-huh. the famous Schwab's drugstore. And I remember having coffee or a soda, I guess a soda at that time with him. And he convinced me and whoever was guiding me at the time, which was my attorney, that I should do personal appearances as Homer. And so he hired comedy writers, and I started out doing an act, which was about a 15-minute, what they call a stand-up comedy act.
Mm-hmm.
And I played all over the country. When the Aldrich family used to go off 8 weeks every summer, you see, and I would go out and play Chicago and or the Midwest and all these places. And it became, I became sort of a comedian on my own, but as Homer. I played Lowe's State in New York, for instance, you know, places like that. Then from that, you say, did it hold me back? I was the guest comedian on Perry Como's Chesterfield Supper Club for a whole season. Then where the Aldrich family started, or semi-started, with Kate Smith, I went on the Smith Show with Catherine, as we call her, being a comic, but always as Homer, you see. But she called me Jackie. I was never called on these appearances Homer,
mm-hmm,
but the
mm-hmm.
voice was the same character, you see.
So Jackie Kelp became
it was
a character.
That's right.
Well, you were billed as a comedian on another show, which came a little bit later in your radio career,
that's
Celebrity
right.
Club.
Yes, that was the Continental Can Show on CBS on Saturday nights at 10 o'clock, 10:15. And that was Margaret Whiting's first exposure to the networks. She was the singer. John Daly was the host,
mm-hmm.
and Ray Block's orchestra. And then I would have a different guest star every week, and we did sketches, and you know, people like Lucille Ball, Peter Lawford, Hildegard. You remember Hildegard,
oh,
of
yes.
course.
I would like to just mention one thing here. You did in your first Hollywood movie. Who was that leading man that was in there? I think people might remember him a little bit.
Cary Grant.
Cary Grant.
Yes,
how
and again,
that?
I go back to the fact that having been very fortunate as a child, and as a matter of fact, all through my professional life of working with wonderful people, and of course, Mr. Grant was starting out at the time, and he was a very handsome and very well, much sought after at that time. Of course, he still is.
Yeah, he's still making.
He
it.
Was most gentle with a little boy who was you know, new. It was my first film, and they took me to see the Rushes, and I got very upset. I didn't like seeing myself on that big thing in the projection room, you see. And so he took me aside the next day, and he said, "Don't go and see them." He said, "I never go." So from that time on, I never went to see the Rushes. So he was a very nice person.
We'll return to the Golden Age of Radio after this message. When is a bank a savings bank? The answer to that question is when the word savings is part of the name, like Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank in Middletown, Cromwell, Colchester, and Montville. Now there is a venerable century-old savings bank that features savings as their principal service to you, helping you to save frequently, helping you to save successfully. Any kind of savings account that suits your way of saving is yours. Theirs is a total effort, everything from an instant savings account, which you can open with only $5, to a 6-month money market certificate that pays the highest rate and yield, $10,000 minimum, and the rate changes every week. Farmers and Mechanics Savings Bank has such a variety of savings accounts and certificates that you can safely assume they have your kind of a savings account. And assume something else, that the interest rates paid on your savings are the highest permitted by law. Saturday hours at 6 branch offices and 24-hour teller service at the Cromwell Square office, Main and College Street, Middletown, Colchester and Montville offices. Member FDIC and an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio. Our guest tonight is well-known radio actor Jackie Kelk. One of the earliest shows that you appeared on, perhaps this is where you got your start as a child actor, was Coast to Coast on a Bus.
Yes, well, that was when I came, I went to the coast and made a picture a long time ago. Well, no, listen.
Before the Korean War.
Yeah, indeed. And, no, the picture was Loretta Young's first starring film. And up until that time, when I came back to New York, I'd been playing in the theater and in radio with people like Mr. Cantor and Burns and Allen and all those people, with youngsters, you know. So my mother thought, well, let him work with kids. So that is when I went with Milton Cross and Madge Tucker, who was the lady next door, whom most people will remember.
Coast to coast on a bus, the White Rabbit line jumps anywhere, anytime.
Oh, we just roll along, and our ups and our downs, and our ups and downs, all day long. Good morning, little and big folks, children and grown-ups, passengers on the White Rabbit bus. Good morning and a happy Easter to you, with snow and everything. Yes, imagine my surprise when I looked out of my little apartment window this morning, this Easter morning, and found it snowing. Snowing to beat the band. Fortunately, it has all disappeared. It's so cold, though, that most of the children could not wear their Easter things this morning. Of course, that didn't bother me much. I didn't get any new things. Don't you feel sorry for me? But just to say, the big white rabbit bus is flying along, loaded with happy Easter wishes for everyone.
And now, Mr. Conductor, the committee is here.
Yes, sir. We're all here.
The committee?
The Peter Pig Committee, Mr. Cross.
Oh, the Peter Pig Committee, of course.
You don't want to forget about us, Mr. Cross.
We call on you every Sunday.
And we always ask for a Peter Pig story.
Of course, we know we don't have to ask.
But we like to.
And then that makes us sure we'll have a story.
You do have a Peter Pig story, don't you, Mr. Conductor?
Of course I have, Marilyn. A special Easter story from Folly Farm.
Good.
And here it is. Chapter 333 in The Adventures of Peter Pig by Gene Peterson. The day before Easter finds Mumsy Pig trotting down Piggles Avenue, holding on to the hoof of her small son, Peter. Looks as if he were being taken somewhere under protest. Let's check and find out. Listen.
Oink. One day I have to play. Why do you have to drag me down to the Drake Brothers department store, Mumsy? There'll be a mob of animals, and they'll push us around and step on us.
Oh, I realize getting in a crowd isn't much fun, Peter, but I have to buy you something decent to wear to church tomorrow.
Well, can't you do it without my going along?
No, not with any certainty. The way we grow, I want to make sure we get the right size today, because we won't have time to change it.
Well, then, let's go around by Hutch Hollow on our way to town.
Oh, what do you want to go by Hutch Hollow for?
Well, I have to make sure Ronald Rabbit comes by our house tomorrow. It's Easter, and I think it would be kind of nice to ask him and his brothers and sisters over to play.
Yes, it would, Peter, but can't you telephone him after we get home from shopping?
No, they haven't a telephone. With 15 bunnies to feed, I guess Mr. Rabbit can't afford anything like a telephone. Look, their house is just around the corner, Mumsy. Come on, I can see it from here. There's Honeybun, the baby, swinging on the gate.
Oh, dear, isn't she the cutest little thing that ever happened?
Oink, hello there, Honeybun.
Oh, hello, Peter Pig.
Hello, honey. How are you this bright, sunny morning?
Very well, Faith. And how are you, Mrs. Pig?
Oh, I'm well, too, honey. But I am in a pretty big hurry. Do you suppose Peter could see your brother Ronald right away?
No, Peter can't see Ronald this morning.
Oink, why not?
Because Ronald doesn't have any pants to wear.
Doesn't have any pants to wear.
No, Mama's washing them for Rufus' outfit to press them so they'll look nice for Rufus' Easter outfit.
For Rufus' Easter outfit?
Yes, you know Rufus. He's my brother that's next oldest to Ronald. Mama cut Rufus' pants down to fit Robbie, and Robbie's pants down to fit Ralphie. Mama's been awfully busy cutting. She sent me out the place so I wouldn't bother her.
Oink, honey, how are you going to have a new Easter outfit?
Oh, yes. Mama took my sister's rosy dress and made it shorter, and then she washed it and put new ribbons on it. Oh, it's so pretty. Now everybody has something to wear for Easter, excepting Ronald.
Oink, doesn't he have anything to wear?
Well, Mama knitted him a sweater, but what good's a sweater if you haven't any pants?
Oink, honey, wouldn't you like to run in the house and ask your mother if you can go down to the Drake Brothers department store with Peter and me?
Oh, yes, Mrs. Pigs. Oh, goody, I'll ask Mama right away. Just a minute, Mrs. Pig.
Good morning, Mrs. Pig. What can I do for you today?
Oink, Mr. Drake, I want to look at a suit for Peter.
Oh, then I'll wait on you myself. The clerks have so much business with everybody buying their new Easter bonnets. What kind of suit would you want to see, Mrs. Pig? Something's in the blue serge with a double-pressed coat.
Well, if you have any special bargains, I'm always interested in saving money, Mr. Drake.
Then I know just what you want. Come with me, young pig. I will show you a suit that will make you look like the kid's pajamas. It has a pinstripe and a belt in the back.
Well, I have a coat with a belt in the back, Mr. Drake. I'd rather have something different.
No, okay. I was just thinking I could save your mama some money. It has two pair of pants.
Did you say two pair of pants?
Uh-huh. Oink, Peter.
Well, say, Mr. Drake, I guess you can show me that suit.
Well, here it is. Just feel the quality.
Uh-huh. Oink, yeah, I'll take it, Mr. Drake. And will you wrap the two pair of pants in separate packages?
Now, Peter, not so fast. Oink, Mr. Drake, could you give me one pair of pants to go with that suit that would be too small for Peter? You see, I want one pair to give to Mrs. Rabbit's oldest little boy.
Oh, you mean the one that has such long ears and hops around like a jumping jack?
That's the one. He needs an Easter outfit, Mr. Drake. His mother'd be too proud to accept a straight-out gift. You see, I thought if I could arrange not to have two pair of pants that would fit Peter, you know, so I'd have to take one smaller pair.
Oh, I see, Mrs. Pig. And Peter couldn't wear them, and you wouldn't want to throw away such good pants, so maybe Mrs. Rabbit could use them.
That's the idea, Mr. Drake.
Well, it's a little irregular, but seeing you're such a good customer, Mrs. Pig, and we wouldn't want for a rabbit should run around on Easter without pants. I'll do it.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Drake. Oh, Peter, honey, we'll be ready to go as soon as Mr. Drake wraps up our package. There are two pair of pants, Peter, that come with that suit we're buying, but only one of them will fit you. The other one is too small.
Aw, can you beat that?
Yes, it does seem a shame, but I guess I can use them to make hooked rugs. Unless, do you suppose your mother could cut that small pair of pants down to fit Ronald, honey?
I don't know. I expect she could. She's an awfully good cutter.
Well, here's our package. Come, let's run along fast. Maybe they won't have to be cut at all.
Oh, goody, then everybody has something to wear for Easter. Come on, Ronald, let's run quick, so we can tell Ronald. Ronald's going to have pants for Easter. Ronald's going to have pants for Easter.
Well, I'm glad to know Ronald's going to have pants for Easter, aren't you? We're speaking, of course, of Ronald the Bunny. Peter Pig was Mickey O'Day, Honey Bun was Jeannie Bunny Elkins, Mr. Drake was Jackie Kelk, and Mumsy Pig was Audrey Ing. It was a good story, wasn't it? The children were fine.
And so that was Coast to Coast on the Bus, and we did that for many years. At the same time, that was on NBC,
mm-hmm.
And at the same time, most of us would do Let's Pretend, which was on CBS. Can I mention all these networks?
Oh, by all means. You can even mention the sponsors of these programs. Jackie Kelk is our guest tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. And Ed, you certainly remember. You were a child yourself at the time the show was on
well,
the air.
Think,
Let's pretend.
Jack and I are
younger by the minute here. I don't know what's
You know, that's something we really, in all fairness, Jack, we have to point this out for the benefit of our radio listeners. We're not talking to an old man by any means.
Thank you.
You're a very handsome, middle-aged gentleman, and I think that most of the people that we have come in contact with in this business were very, very young when they were known nationally on the networks. It was a young man's business, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. You see, I feel most fortunate because of the fact that I started so young working. I mean, as a working actor, child or no child, I mean, nowadays, you know, they train, they have schools and all this and that. This was actually just standing up there and working, and that's the way I learned my craft.
Mm-hmm.
I was simply, there I was, and you know. By the way, just to get back to Let's Pretend for a moment, something occurred to me. We used to work in the old CBS studio at 485 Madison Avenue, and this is before any unions, AFRA, which is, of course, now AFRA and AFTRA, you
right,
know, for the day.
Right.
And there were no unions at all. And we would, Nyla Mack, of course, the great lady children's benefactor, I mean, she was just a marvel. She wrote and directed and produced these shows, Let's Pretend, for a great many years. We were paid in cash. And after, the program was on Saturday morning, I think 10 o'clock or something.
Yeah, 10 o'clock.
Yeah. And we would go then after the program up to her office, a few floors up, and we would be paid in cash $3.50. Now, this is the truth.
That's that was impossible. A nationwide show, too, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yes,
all over the country.
$3.50. And it was just a. But you see, it didn't matter. The money didn't matter then, of course. It was doing something we loved to do. And mm-hmm. people like Patricia Pearden, you know, who is now a fine. She appears here in Stratford in Shakespearean things. Albert Alley was always the prince. And he is now the story editor for Ironside on television. And Miriam Wolfe, who was the witch on The Witch's Tale for so many years, she was always the witch on, and I was always the king.
The king. Why don't we turn now to another of the types of shows that I consider to be my favorite, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, I think this came along a little later in your career, Jack, and it too is found its place as, I think, one of radio's immortal shows, Superman.
Oh, yes.
And what was the role you played on that show?
Well, I was Jimmy Olsen, the copy boy, and then I became a cub reporter as the year. I was on that for 7 years. So naturally, I had to grow. Homer never grew, really. I was 16 for so many years, I never knew how old I was.
Yeah, you and Jack Armstrong never seemed to make it out of high school.
And
right?
Orphan Annie. But Superman was, you see, that ran concurrently with the Aldrich family. That was on, I think, at 4:45 or 5:45 on WOR. And 15 minutes five times a week. Three times a week.
Monday, Wednesday,
yes,
and Friday.
Uh-huh. And Bud Collier was Superman, and Bud was such a kidder. And I had this tremendous scene this one day on Superman as Jimmy, and I was, you know, emoting my little heart out, and Bud came around, no one else had a speech, and he came around behind me and unloosened my belt and let my pants slip to the floor, you see, and there I was in my shorts standing doing this part, and of course, to keep from breaking up was just, it was really something, but it was great.
Well, we might hear Jimmy Olsen now. Would that be possible, Ed?
Yes, I think I can do that. And maybe we might guess who the other juvenile lead is in here. You know, when you hear the excerpt, it's someone you may not suspect.
Kellogg's Pep, the super delicious cereal, presents
The Adventures of Superman. Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird, it's a plane, it's Superman!
Yes, it's Superman, and today as he hurtles through the skies searching for Jimmy Olsen and Beanie Martin, their very lives are in danger. We'll join him in a moment, but right now, here's Dan McCullough with an exciting walkie-talkie bulletin.
Say, gang, wouldn't you like to be able to send code messages and important reports over a model walkie-talkie? A model just like Joe Martin made for Beanie and Jimmy Olsen? Why, of course you would. And gang, right now is your chance to own a model walkie-talkie. That's right. The Kellogg Company of Battle Creek has one for you if you send for it right away. Now, I'll tell you how to get it in just a minute, but first, I'd like to give you a little more information about this amazing instrument. It's almost a foot high, made of strong cardboard in regular army color, and it comes equipped with a regular receiver transmitter and 48 feet of communication line. And, gang, there's almost no limit to the exciting and dramatic things you can do with your Kellogg walkie-talkie. Now, here's how you can get this amazing prize. Just send two box tops from that super delicious cereal, Kellogg's Pep, along with 10 cents in cash and your name and complete address, clearly printed, to Superman, Box 80, that's Box 80, Battle Creek, Michigan. Your own Kellogg walkie-talkie will be rushed to you right away.
And now the adventures of Superman. When Jimmy Olsen and Beanie Martin strung a walkie-talkie from Beanie's house to the empty house next door, they were seized by two men and carried off in a car. Jimmy, however, managed to call an SOS over the walkie-talkie to Beanie's brother, Joe, who was at the other end of the instrument, and Joe summoned Clark Kent. Searching the empty house, Kent found what seemed to be a solid gold nail, which had been painted red, and at the curb in front of the house, the fresh tracks of a car. As Superman, he streaked away to follow the tracks. But meanwhile, miles away on the crest of a steep, deserted hill, Jimmy and Beanie's captors have set the two unconscious boys in the front seat of the car and sent it careening down the hill to the river below. As we continue now, Superman is rocketing above a dark highway. No sign of that car yet, but it went this way. I can still see its tracks on the highway, blowout patch on the left rear tire. Oh, wait a minute. Turned off the highway there, climbed that steep hill. Now, there go the tracks. Straight down the hill. Uh-oh, that hill ends at the embankment above the river. Great Scott, there's a car in the river, sinking to the bottom. And Jimmy and Beanie are in it. Down to them. Down! Plummeting down like some giant bird, the Man of Steel dives headlong into the river. A few powerful strokes and he is beside the car, slowly sinking to the bottom. In a split second, he is beneath it, the full weight of it resting on his broad shoulders. Then up, up through the murky darkness, until the steel top of the sedan breaks the surface of the water. Then one final effort, and the dripping car hurtles through the air. Land gently on the embankment.
There they are. Oh, now to get a look at them. Another moment or two, and this car would have been filled with water, and those kids trapped like rats. Oh, I think they're all right, though. Jim. Jim, wake up. Jim.
Where am I?
You're safe now, Jim.
Beanie. Where's Beanie?
He's here right beside you.
Oh, is he all right?
He will be. Yeah, he's coming to now.
Don't do it.
Take it easy, Beanie. Take it easy. Everything's under control.
Superman. Beanie, it's Superman.
Where?
Where? Right here. Look at him.
Gleeps. It is Superman. Gleeps.
What happened to those two guys, Superman?
Yeah, did you get them?
Oh, no, not yet. There's no sign of anyone around here.
Oh, where are we?
On the riverbank.
The riverbank? Well, how do we get here?
That's what I was going to ask you. This car was sinking into the river when I spotted it.
Sinking into the river?
That's right.
No wonder I'm all wet.
You're lucky you're alive, Beanie.
Well, you mean those guys put us in the car and then rolled it into the river?
That's about the size of it, Jim.
But why? Well, what did we do?
Oh, well, we'll talk about that later. Right now, I want to get you both back to Beanie's house.
You mean you're going to fly us back to my house?
You're not afraid, are you?
Afraid? Me afraid to fly with Superman? Is he kidding, Jim?
All right, Beanie. Come on. One of you under each arm.
What about the car, Superman?
Hmm?
Won't the police want to see it?
We'll send them back for it. All set, Beanie?
Oh, boy, sure. Let her rip.
Okay. Up! Up! And away!
All right, I recognize Jack, of course, and I'm going to take a guess on this. Jackson Beck.
Right.
Was the other juvenile.
Exactly. How
Jackson Beck was also the announcer on the program.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
Still very active in the business
today.
Oh,
yes.
Doing commercial
work. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Well, Ed, we were talking about Superman, and certainly Jack appeared in a number of children's serials, didn't he?
Yes, there was another very famous series. It was on for a number of years, Terry and the Pirates.
That's right.
And I'm just going over the list of actors and actresses who appeared on Terry and the Pirates.
Well, Aggie
Jackie
Moorhead
Kelp.
Was the dragon lady.
Right. That's right. It's amazing that Cliff Norton, is that the same Cliff Norton
yes,
that
mm-hmm.
we know today?
Right.
And on it goes. Mandel Kramer was on the show at one time. Well, I didn't realize that there were so many actors doing radio parts on children's shows.
Well, there were weeks, by actual count, that I did 28 shows. 28 different shows mm-hmm. in 1 week.
You must have had feelings at that time that this was an exciting life.
Well, it was. It surely was. And of course, another part of it was there were always things happening, you see. Like, for instance, on the Aldrich family, we were on at 8 o'clock, and then we had to do a repeat show, you know, at 11:30 for California. So a lot of the times, many times, people would go home and take a nap, you know, mm-hmm. and they wouldn't wake up in time to come back for the repeat. Or on a couple of occasions that I remember, some of the older folks would go off and have dinner with several martinis or something and would be in no condition to be a typical American housewife or something at 11:30 at night. So a lot of it was always, that's what I said about learning your trade while you're doing it, you know. There was a show called Cavalcade of America, and which was a kind of a prestige show to be on, a nighttime show. The DuPont Company, you mentioned sponsors before, mm-hmm. was a DuPont show and went on for a great many years. And they would have guest stars in from Hollywood. And this one time, very dear friend of mine, Nancy Kelly, had flown in to do and it was one of the shows they would give me a chance to play dramatic parts. Usually I was either, you know, Homer or Jimmy Olsen or, you know, it was mostly comedy, actually. But I got to do different things on Cavalcade. And this one time, Nancy had flown in from California. I don't remember what the story was, but Agnes, again, Miss Moorhead, was on it. And Bud Collier was the announcer, and he always had the opening line, DuPont presents Cavalcade of America, and also with the studio audience, and by the way, full dress. I mean, mm-hmm. we had the ladies were in long evening dresses, etc. And Bud would do a warm-up for the studio audience and then go off and get himself together. And this particular show, he did the warm-up and went off to a piano and was straightening his script out, and we went on the air, and nothing happened, you see, and Bud seemed to have been in another world, and so nothing happened, and the producer was going crazy in the control room, so little Jackie Kelk goes up, and I tried to make my voice as deep as possible. I said, DuPont presents the Cavalcade of America. Well, of course, everybody cracked up. But anyway, we got on the air and did the show. No, those things did happen.
They
course.
Still do, as a matter of
yes.
fact, from time
yes,
to time.
Sure.
This is Dick Bertel, and Jackie Kelk is our guest tonight. We're reminiscing about the golden days of radio, of course. And, Jack, I know that Ed is very anxious to play one of his prizes from his vast collection of radio programs. Ed?
Yes, Dick, because we've heard, the one side of Jack's career, playing the juvenile and the, the comic role, and we have now a really good dramatic part from a program called Suspense, which everybody's familiar with. This particular one was called Shadow on the Wall, and I think it shows a different Jack Kelk than what we've been hearing up to now.
Shadow on the Wall, starring Jackie Kelk. A tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
Soon, very soon now, there'll be a shadow on the wall. Shadows, always shadows. I'll never get away from them. I've been watching them for days now. Or is it weeks? I don't know anymore. But I do know it started the last day of my brother's life. My brother. My dear, dear older brother. A thief. All my life he had stolen from me. Stolen my father's respect and then my mother's love. Now he was determined to steal the last hold I had on life. The house. The house where I was born and grew up out on Long Island. He was building a modern monstrosity on the estate a few hundred yards away. And when it was finished, the house, Mother's house, was to be wrecked. It was just too much.
Henry, will you stop whining? I have a great deal to do before I leave for the coast.
Roger, if I have to get on my knees and beg, I will. But please don't destroy the house.
This place is worthless. Victorian houses like this cost too much to maintain.
You think of nothing but money. What about my feelings?
Your feelings?
Yes, and Mother's, if she were still alive.
Oh, Mother would approve, I'm sure of that.
How do you know? This is the house Mother came to as a bride. The house where she bore and raised her two sons. This house was her life.
Oh, really, Henry?
It's true. How can you stand by and watch the room where she used to kiss us goodnight broken to bits by wreckers?
Sentimental nonsense.
And what about all her silver and furniture? Old and beautiful. You can't put things like that in a modern house.
We'll pack them carefully and send them to storage.
Yes. Yes, you just pack Mother away and forget her. Look, look here. Her favorite candlesticks.
Don't wave that around. It's worth a small fortune.
And a wealth of love to me.
Nonsense. Now, as I said, I have a great deal to do before I leave tomorrow.
I hate you, Roger. I hate you.
What?
I'd like to see you dead.
Henry, stop being childish.
I'd tear your heart out if you had any.
Henry, put down that candlestick.
No, they're Mother's. And you want to pack Mother away.
I order
but
you to...
you won't destroy us. You won't put Mother's memory in storage. I'll make sure Mother isn't hidden.
You give me that.
No. I hate you. I hate you. I hate you. Stood dazed. Roger lay on the floor, a trickle of blood oozing from his temple. I bent over him. No breath. No pulse. Roger was dead. Suddenly I heard a car coming up the drive. Mrs. Loomis, the housekeeper, was returning from the village. I dragged Roger's body to the closet, pushed him inside and locked the door. Not a moment too soon.
Mr. Henry, I stopped by the laundry for Mr. Rogers' shirts, but they weren't ready.
Oh?
He'll be furious, I suppose, seeing he's flying to the coast in the morning.
Well, it doesn't matter, Mrs. Loomis. He's already gone.
Gone, sir?
Yes, he decided to spend the night in New York at the club and go to the airport from there.
Well, I never got a chance to say goodbye to him. Perhaps we could go to the airport together.
No, and... I'll see him off alone. I waited in the library until I heard Mrs. Loomis go out. I had to get rid of the body now. But where? As I gazed out across the lawn to the new house, that awful modern house, the idea came. That very day, the workmen had just finished the base of the fireplace. a broad fieldstone structure, about 3 feet high and 8 feet across. The mortar would still be wet. The stones would easily pull loose. Yeah. Why not? The perfect place. After all, Roger was so fond of the new house. I went to bed early that night, but I couldn't sleep. As I lay staring at the ceiling, the enormity of the thing I'd done overwhelmed me. At first, it was more a feeling than anything real. A fleeting feeling that another presence was beginning to form in the house. I got up and flooded my room with lights, but I couldn't push the thought from my mind. I mustn't leave my room. I was always safe in my room when I was a little boy. But it was no use. That's where I saw it for the first time. It was barely visible at first. Just a dim shadow on the wall across from me. And then slowly, ever so slowly, it began to grow wider and wider, darker and darker, until it became a perfect silhouette. Terrified to move. My hands gripped the sides of the chair as I looked at the shadow. The shadow of a man hanging by his neck. I stared rigid at this ghastly vision. The head bowed against the chest. The hands tied behind the back. The feet together, hanging limp. Stayed there motionless. And then, slowly as it had come, it disappeared. The head blended into the body. The legs seemed to melt into the wall. And at last it was gone.
Jackie Kelk is our guest tonight here on the Golden Age of Radio. We call him Jack on this program, but
thank
his professional
name. You won't come back otherwise.
Jack, you're going to write a book about the child actor, aren't you?
I'm writing it, Dick. I've been working on it for quite some time now. It's not completely my story, but it's certainly based on my experiences in the past 35 years in the business.
I'm sure that our listeners are wondering now, what is a radio actor like Jack Kelk doing today? We don't hear him on the radio anymore. Certainly you're not home listening to old tapes, are you?
No, no, indeed. Well, actually, since when I returned from, after living in California for many years, I went into the casting business, and I got very much interested in that because, as a matter of fact, it gave me the opportunity to use in commercials and films the people that I'd worked with over all the years, you see. And the people at the agency that I worked for, when I would have a casting session, they would say, well, where did you get this person? And, you know, for instance, Jane Withers, who mm-hmm. now plays, who has been playing the Lady Plummer for almost 7 years, was one of my first people, you see, that I got. And, of course, Jane and I had known each other from the early days in California when we were kids, and I called her and said, would you do a commercial? And she said, if I believed in the product, and she's that kind of a lady, she's a very lovely person. And she, I flew her to New York, and she tested, and that's 7 years ago, and Josephine is still cleaning up the sinks and crying to the bank, right?
All the way. Well, Jack, I certainly want to thank you for being our guest here on the Golden Age of Radio. You make your home in New Canaan now, and I hope that we'll be able to review that book when it comes out and have you again to reminisce with us.
I'll send you an autographed copy, Dick.
I will look
you
forward
too,
to
Ed.
That.
Well, I appreciate it, Jack.
This is Dick Bertel. Good night.
Here's the Manhattan merry-go-round that brings you the bright side of life, that whirls you in music to all the big night spots of New York town, to hear the top songs of the week sung so clearly you can understand every word and sing your time.
The Golden Age of Radio was brought to you by Farmers and Mechanics, the century-old savings bank as modern as this computer age, with branches in Middletown, Cromwell, Colchester, and Montville. The Golden Age of Radio was produced by Dick Bertel.
Ah, don't touch that dial. Listen to... Kraft Foods Company presents Willard Waterman as the Great Gildersleeve.